Welcome to the Writer's Market Podcast, which is focused on helping writers find more success with their writing. I'm your co-host, Robert Lee Brewer.
And I'm your co-host, Brian A. Clems.
Together, we're Robert and Brian, and this is our show.
The Writer's Market Podcast is hosted by writersmarket.com and the Writer's Digest Writing Community, a division of F&W, a content and e-commerce company.
Let's see what's on tap today. Okay, so for this podcast, we're going to talk to C. Hope Clark, and I'm excited to talk to Hope because for Funds for Writers site, she has experience with conferences, she's a novelist, so I'm sure she's going to give us a lot of great information during this podcast. But since this is our first episode for this podcast, Brian, I was thinking... We can talk about ourselves a little bit here. And I know that both of us have been around F&W for a while. Maybe you could share a little bit like when you started and what you started doing and maybe where you're at right now.
Sure, absolutely. Many of you don't know that Robert and I go back way too long these days. We've been around with Writer's Digest so long. I came over to Writer's Digest, the print side of things on the magazine, in 2003 as an associate editor. So I worked mainly doing column editing. I wrote a column for a decade called Questions and Quandaries, where I answered grammar questions about publishing. I made it a point to get to know as many things as I possibly could. And so that was really an amazing, way to introduce myself not only to readers but also to learning about writing. And so that really was where I started with the magazine. And over time, as a lot of people know, as they see my face, you know, on the website and in their email inbox every morning, they find out that I'm now the senior online editor with Writer's Digest, and I oversee writersdigest.com and that kind of thing. I do newsletters. I do all these kinds of different ways to give people information on how to write better and how to get published, and that's my main goal in this community. So, Robert, I know you do a lot of similar things over there at Writer's Market.
Yeah, like you, we've both been doing newsletters for so long. I think my first newsletter might have come out like in 2002 or something, and almost every week since then. I know you do them like multiple times a week now. Both of us have increased frequency. We both do the blogging. I do blogging on the Writer's Digest site. You do it on there as well as like keeping us kind of pointed in the right direction, which is great. And I started off interning with F&W when they had an ampersand in their sign.
I remember those days.
And they had publications at the end instead of media or e-commerce company. So it's interesting, even just personally, like how the company has changed has kind of reflected how the entire industry of publishing has changed over time. I started off interning with the Writer's Market books, and they just kept me around for some reason, and now I edit them. And I've actually got two bookshelves up here to my left just filled with Writer's Market books that I've edited and Poets Market books, and it's been so much fun. When I first started here, I was a fiction writer and an award-winning fiction writer and a poet, but nobody knew it because I did not share that information with anyone. Eventually I did, and now I've got a Poetic Asides blog and write about poetry. I'm the, I guess, kind of like poet expert around here. I get all the questions forwarded to me. So.
Oh, you're absolutely the poetry expert around here. And for our listeners, if you don't know, Robert also won the award for being a few years back about being, is it the Poet Laureate of the Blogosphere?
Yes. And that was cool because people actually voted on it. So it was kind of like a People's Choice Award, I guess. So
well, you got my vote, if I remember correctly.
So one of the things I love is how all of us actually write. I've got my poetry collection, Solving the World's Problems. You've got your book on parenting.
Yes. Yes. I've my book. I have I'm the author of the popular humor parenting book, Oh Boy, You're Having a Girl, A Dad's Survival Guide to Raising Daughters, which came out with Adams Media a couple years ago. Been one of the highlights of my life, holding that book when it came out, seeing it sell. It's been a lot of fun, a dream come true kind of stuff. And I know you can speak to that as well.
Yeah, and we're both parents. We both have multiple children. It's always cool. I'm based in Georgia most of the year. Brian's based in Cincinnati, and every so often I'm able to get up there to the office, and you know, I love just hanging out when I'm up there and being able to talk about everything from publishing to parenting. So it's great stuff, and I'm really looking forward to this podcast series that we're doing together.
Yeah, me too. This really becomes an extension of our lunches when you're in town and when we talk about different things. So I'm looking forward to finding out who we get to interview, what we learn, what kind of information we can share to help others get published and reach their writing goals and dreams. And that's really what I know I'm in it for, and I know you're in it for. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk to Hope here in a minute. But first, we've recorded a couple segments. The first one is three things in which we cover things to help writers. It'll be different for each podcast. And also your platform tip of the day, which will also change over time. So here you go. Welcome to Three Things, the part of the Robert and Brian show that takes a look at three specific things writers need to do to find more success with their writing. This time around, I'm going to focus on the three things writers need to do to find long-term success with their writing, regardless of genre. First, good writing. While great writing would be even better, good writing will get the job done for most writers. Good writing doesn't include typos or horrible grammar, though a bending of the rules here and there is fine. So it's important to learn the craft of writing. The second thing writers need to find long-term success is a knowledge of the writing markets. After more than a decade of working on the Writer's Market books and writersmarket.com website, I can vouch for market directories as a great resource for finding markets. But writers also need to read the magazines and websites to which they wish to submit their writing, follow them on social media, and get a deep understanding of their editorial slant and expectations of their readership. Third, writers who want to find long-term success need to be professional. Professionalism includes writing concise query letters and well-researched book proposals, sure. But professionalism also includes negotiating better rates, asking questions, and following up on submissions and manuscripts. Professionals are organized and dependable, and editors love working with such writers. So that's three things, but I'm a poet and a bit of a rule bender, so here's a bonus fourth key for writers to find long-term success. Persistence. It's often said that rejection is the name of the game when writers are submitting their work, and that's often true, especially for writers just starting off. Successful writers learn to shrug off rejection and keep moving forward. If they're rejected 100 times, they submit 101, because it's persistence that often wins out in publishing. Master these four things, and writing success is sure to follow. Or spread like wildfire. Until next time, keep writing and marketing what you write.
And now, your platform tip of the day. Today's focus is, what is a platform and why do you need it? A platform is anything that makes you visible and connects you to readers. This includes but is not limited to a website, a blog, a Twitter account, a Facebook page, a Pinterest page, especially if the focus of your topic is visual, YouTube, any other social media account that you can be on and effectively reach people, an email newsletter, speaking at events, guest posting on other websites, and quite honestly, anything else that lets eyeballs find you. So, why do you need a platform? Well, number one, it helps readers find you. If they can't find you, then they can't find your book. And if they can't find your book, they won't have the opportunity to buy it. And if they don't buy it, well, I don't think I have to tell you why that's a problem. So why do you need a platform in today's publishing world, but didn't in yesterday's publishing world? The truth is, bookstore shelves are shrinking, so the casual buyer who browses is disappearing. You need people to find you, then find a direct link to your book, or to get people to know you well enough through platform that they search for your name or your book on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, IndieBound, or wherever they buy books. Also, if you don't have a book deal yet, creating a platform lifts your chances of landing an agent or getting a publishing contract. Let me explain. When agents and publishers sign a writer, they are taking on a risk. Specifically, they are taking a risk on you, that their time and money invested in you will earn them money in the long run. If you come to the table with a solid platform, and what I mean by that is you show them that you have already built up a large readership of people who are likely willing to buy your book, you've lowered the risk for them, making it more likely that they will take a chance on you. Can you get by in today's world without a platform? I get this question all the time at writing conferences. After all, many writers are introverted and don't like the idea of spending time connecting with the outside world. Many writers just want to write. So the answer to this difficult question is, yes, you can, and it still happens. But by not building a platform, you are hurting your chances and making it more difficult for yourself to land a book deal. And the challenge of getting published without a platform is only getting more difficult as book publishers tighten their budgets and get more selective of which manuscripts they publish. And now, the final word. The publishing industry is ever evolving. As a writer, it's important you evolve with it. While your number one task as a writer is to write an amazing book, your number 1.2 task is to start connecting to others, to potential readers, online, in person, really wherever else you can find them. In other words, if you don't already have a platform, start one today, immediately, after you finish listening to this awesome podcast, of course. So where do you go from here? Thankfully, Robert has put together a step-by-step guide on how to create your writer platform in 30 days. You can find it at writersdigest.com/build-your-platform. And for more in-depth advice on how to grow your author platform, pick up a copy of Create Your Writer Platform, The Key to Building an Audience, Selling More Books, and Finding Success as an Author by visiting writersdigestshop.com.
Hi, we've got C. Hope Clark with us today. She is the author of the Carolina Slade Mystery Series and the Edisto Island Mystery Series. Also an author of a nonfiction book, The Shy Writer Reborn, founder and current manager of FundsForWriters.com, and just a great resource of the different types of funds that are available for writers. To learn more about Hope, go to fundsforwriters.com or chopeclark.com. And Hope, we have so much to discuss between your work as a writer and as a writer advocate, but let's start with fundsforwriters.com.
All right.
I've heard the origin story at conferences before of how it started and found it really interesting. And I think most people listening to this podcast would find it very interesting. So could you share how fundsforwriters.com got started?
Ah, yeah, that's an old story. I actually started writing my own mystery novel and spent 2 years writing it and couldn't sell it. You know, the age-old story. My mother was friends with Fern Michaels and even tried to get me through those routes. And, you know, I thought, well, if I can't make it that way, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. So I had done so much research on my own work that I had all these resources and, you know, thought I need to put them somewhere. And I started, my background is in federal grants. So I started talking to other writers online, and I was writing for other websites, doing a little freelancing, and got to talking about it. And a lady said, you need to do something on grants. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm getting away from that day job, you know, that kind of thing. And she actually, we traded information. She taught me how to make a newsletter, and I taught her about grants. And about the time I released it, she kind of dropped off the planet, didn't know where she was, but the newsletter exploded. In 2 months, I had a couple of hundred, and we're talking back in the late 90s. And then in 6 months, I had 1,000. And I wrote her to thank her, saying, you know, you knew more than I did about this. I really appreciate it. This is something that's really taken off, and she had passed on. And it really, really, I felt like it was a little cathartic that this was something that was meant to be. And it's just taken off. I know every time I think about, well, you know, I want to write my novels, and this Funds for Writers thing is really time-consuming, then it explodes again, you know, and I jump up another 1,000 or 2. And I think it was just meant to be, and now it's just a part of my everyday life. I enjoy it. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Awesome.
Yeah, and now there are, what, 40,000 subscribers to the newsletter?
About that. That's right.
Oh.
That's amazing. And fill our readers in, or our listeners in, you know, Funds for Writers. What's your main goal with Funds for Writers?
It's actually, a lot of writers want to write, and they don't want to think about the money part, just like they don't want to think about the promo part. And so it started off educating them about grants, but that was way before crowdfunding came along. So now I throw crowdfunding in there. But I want to let them know that there's other ways to earn money than just from writing the book A to B to C, you know, that there's freelancing, and there's nothing wrong with getting a full-time or part-time writing job, because that can open doors, and contest. I'm a huge advocate for contests, but there's a lot of different ways to trickle money in without you just thinking you have to sell a book. And you know, that's the point. That's the point.
Yeah, that's great advice. There definitely are many avenues for writers to earn money or make money and support their writing career or make it a profession. And I think a lot of writers don't think about that. So, you know, with that, and you mentioned writing competitions, are there any particular ones that you thought were really good? We'll take apart Writer's Digest competitions, but anyone's because those, of course, are the best. But are there some that you recommend, or more importantly, is there something you look for in a writing competition that you recommend to writers?
Oh, that's easier, because I go through hundreds and hundreds of contests, and there's just tons of them out there that are so good. And there's a lot of people worry about scams, and those are few and far between. They really are. Contests are pretty legit, and I vet them pretty well when they go into Funds for Writers. I actually believe in entry fees for a contest, because I believe a contest ought to be funded. You don't want to get to the end and they can't pay the winners.
Right.
But the Writer's Digest contest I do recommend. I recommend highly, and they're really a good shot in the arm on a writer's resume. So even if you you know, place or your honorable mention in that, it's a good thing to have on your resume. So I'm big on contests. As a matter of fact, that's how I vetted when I got back seriously into my mysteries. That's how I vetted whether or not I was ready to go to an agent or to submit to publishers, as I submitted to contests first and felt when I started placing in those, then maybe my writing was of the caliber that I could start thinking of it professionally.
Gotcha. So it really built up your confidence, huh?
It does. But you don't always know if your writing's any good. Gosh, I get that question all the time. Would you look at this and tell if my writing's any good? Well, if you submit to contests... And, you know, the judges are like, this is great, honorable mention, second place, whatever. That's telling you that it's any good.
Mm-hmm. So with one of the interesting things from seeing you speak is just talking about, like, I know you mentioned the grants and the the crowdfunding. Then you've got like the more traditional types of markets. Are there some markets or funds that are maybe really overlooked by most writers that aren't already like kind of in that spirit of hunting them down?
I think a lot of writers don't realize that they have an arts council right in town. You know, there's a lot of towns that have an arts council. Some do have grants, some don't. Some recognize writing as the arts and some don't. But I am amazed at, you can find these little podunk USA towns that have writing grants. We've got one in Shiraw, South Carolina. I mean, you've got to go out of your way to find that town. And they've got an avid arts council that gives grants to writers. So it's a matter of opening your eyes and checking locally to see what's there. But also when it comes to conferences and retreats, you never know if they have grants or scholarships unless you ask, because a lot of them won't advertise them because they'll get inundated with applications and they don't have time to process them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I never thought about that. So asking, I mean, I guess it never hurts to ask. Asking is kind of one of the key steps to finding out if they have something, huh?
Exactly. All they can tell you is no.
Yeah.
And I love the tip about the local arts council, because I know like in magazines, that's one of the main things we always try to emphasize is writers tend to look nationally or look at what, you know, the magazines they see at the grocery stores, like the places they want to get into, when really some of the best opportunities when you're first starting off are regional publications or things that are a little bit closer or more specialized. So that's great advice. I noticed on fundsforwriters.com that there's a free newsletter and a paid newsletter. I know, like kind of said, like the paid one has a little bit more information. Could you kind of explain a little bit the differences between those two?
Sure. The free one's been around forever. There's about, I have to stop my head up. There's about 15 to 20 opportunities in that newsletter, and it comes out every Friday. It's come out every Friday for 16 years. Wow. We've missed two Fridays in 16 years, and I just think that's awesome. One, I was on my way to Europe, and you know, the
reason.
Other one, I was
good
moving
reason.
Cross country to Arizona, so I kind of give myself an okay on those. But it's that one has the biggest following by far, and I a lot of people like to read the editorials because I shoot from the hip. I'm pretty a little bit of tough love, kick some butt kind of thing in that editorial, and I think people really enjoy that. The paid one, it comes out every 2 weeks, and it has 70 of the same opportunities we've been talking about, and it's huge. But I did that because some people were asking me for more information than the free ones has, which told me they were really serious about researching what to do with their writing. And so I started the paid subscription, and it's $18.75 for a year, which I think is pretty decent for that much information. And actually, it's free to the people who buy my novels. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great. Boy, that
so,
really...
so that's actually a great segue into the novel.
Yeah. I've done this before.
Yeah, so tell us, start us off with how many novels you've written to this point, and you know, how your novel career got started.
Well, there's five novels out right now. I'm under contract for the sixth, which is actually due January 1, and I'm not sure I'm going to make that, but I'll be close. I started off writing the first novel just to get it out of my system. You hear that, you know, it's kind of a cliche thing you hear from a lot of writers, but I actually, it's mystery, it's called Low Country Bribe, and it's based on a plain everyday government worker being offered a bribe and then her world just spinning out of control and exploding as it turns on her. And I was actually offered a bribe when I worked for the federal government, and that's where I originated it from. I met my husband on that bribe. He was the federal agent.
That's great.
Yeah, we had a little scandal going on that at the time, but anyway, it made for a great story, and once I embellished and threw some bodies in there and really, really had fun with it, it became a nice little mystery, and the publisher liked it and turned it into a series, and there's three in that series so far. The second series is the Edisto Island Mysteries, and the publisher asked me to diversify and said, we want a second series from you, but we want it in one location, and just gave me these parameters and said, do this and this and this and this, and it stymied me for a while because I'd never been told what to write before. But it actually turned into a real fun series, and that's the one that's current now. Edisto Jinx came out in October.
Cool.
Yeah, and is that the one where the six novels coming out with the Edisto series?
Yes. Okay. The sixth one is the third in the Edisto series, and it's due out next summer.
All right. So with the Carolina series, is that the Carolina Slade mystery series, is that one kind of wrapped up, or are you still looking at possible titles in the future with that one?
Oh, I definitely want to do more with that one. I get asked that a lot. Have you wrapped up one, and are you going to go into a new series? And I've been asked to consider both. After a while, you can only write so fast. And, mm-hmm. You've got two series and the potential for a third, and it's which book or two is coming out each year. And you really start weighing – I hope my publisher's not listening. You really start weighing the traditional versus the indie route because of the length of time it takes between books.
Yeah. Now, I have a question with writing the series. What if you learned that would help other writers who have never written a series before but are leaning that way? Like, what's something that you've learned along the process that you never thought of going into it?
It took me a little while to realize that there's an arc with the main character in the book, but there's an arc with the character in the series. So it's a twofold thing you're juggling here. Your character has to grow both in the story and in the entire series, and that's a little bit of a challenge. So series are not as simple as you think. And then it's a matter of which characters are going to stay for book two, which new ones you're going to insert, because you can't just take the same characters and keep doing the same thing. That just gets old. And it's hard to keep making the splash with the same characters. You know these people by the third and fourth novel, so what can you do to make them splashy in the book? So that's a challenge. The more books you get in a series, the harder it is to come up with a creative story.
And I would think that, juggling two different mystery series, does that ever get, are there any challenges or opportunities with trying to manage two different series at the same time? Does it ever feel like... you're doing the same thing but parallel, or I don't know. Well,
it was hard. It was hard. And the way I got out of Slade's head and into Callie Jean Morgan's head was I had to change voice. Slade is written in first person. Callie's written in third. Oh. And out of all the things I tried to do, that was the only one that worked for me, so that I was not doing Slade speak while I was talking about Callie. And even then, when I was going through edits, my editor said, there's Slade talking, get it out of there. And but changing the voice helped quite a bit. And I had to make the characters so unlike each other as well. But I couldn't write them at the same time. I know some authors that try to do that. I could not write the two series at the same time. I have to have my head totally in one at a time.
Those authors must be few and far between and totally crazy to be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
In this process, one question – or it's actually two questions. One, do you work with the same editor on both your series or all your books? And two, what's that process like?
I've had two editors, because, editors come and go. And I think I'm about to get a third one, to tell you the truth. I've learned that they pretty much trust you, and it puts a lot of responsibility on your shoulders to have this book right when you send it in, because they are, this day and time, there's so much pressure on these publishers to get books out and get them out fast. Even the traditional publishers, we complain about them taking so long, but they're hustling just like everybody else. And The editing can get slipshod here, there, and yonder. You know, I found things after it's been edited several times that the editors and the copy editors missed, and I know there's a mistake in every one of my books, and I've yet to read a book that didn't have one. So it's, you have to get to know your editor, and some are tougher than others, but ultimately it's on you. It really is. So it makes you slow down and have to get it right. I hate my books by the time they go to print because I've edited them to where I can almost recite them. Yes.
There's one other book that we haven't really talked about, and that's The Shy Writer Reborn, which is actually a nonfiction book. And I know that it's a revision of the original book titled The Shy Writer. Could you kind of explain a little bit about, one, what that book covers, but also how it came about?
The Shy Writer and The Shy Writer Reborn came about because I was shy getting into this business, and when I left government service and decided to write full-time, decided I could make this work, I started getting requests to speak to book clubs and writers groups, which I did not want to do. And then I learned going online that you had to communicate there as well. When I first started out, it was simply websites. You know, then it got into forums, and then we got into blogs, and you know, then social media came around, and suddenly you got to be in contact with the public. So it was very difficult for me to do that, and I made myself do it, and I continually came up with little tricks and little ideas on how to make it less painful. And I started keeping notes on it. And over the years, I just came up with so many little tools that helped me get through it that I finally put it into writing because so many people kept calling me and or contacting me saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. And they can. And so that's where the book came about. And it's very near and dear to me. I love that book. I really want to do another rewrite, to tell you the truth, because I've got more tools and more ideas for it. And I've gotten more thanks from writers over that little book than almost anything else I've done.
Well, hopefully it's not too painful coming on with us these days.
No.
You're used to this kind of thing.
It's better. It's better now.
Well, give us an example of maybe just one. I know you have tons. You said you'd love to do another version of the book. Like, what's one tip that you've picked up, especially in this more social media age, everything, one tip that you would offer up?
Something new. I get confused as to what's in the book and what I'm already doing that's not in the book.
That may be just something that's, you know, that you think's extremely valuable.
I tell people to try and deal with whoever's on the other side one-on-one, like nobody else is listening. And I do that myself when I'm speaking. It could be a room full of 500 people, and I will, with each comment, single out one pair of eyes at a table. And try to tell myself that's what you're doing to get some of the nerves and butterflies down and out of it. If it's really rough and I'm struggling through it, I tell myself, you know, you're never going to see these people again. But there's also the, you know, all right, stop and think. You're not falling apart here. Everything is really okay. It's not the end of the world. And you slow down and you keep going and it's okay. To the point, I also have little things like keep a pen in your hand. I always have to have something in my hand when I'm speaking. And people don't realize it. It's a pen, it's a bottle of water, whatever it is. And that seems to help a lot of people. At signings, I tell them if they don't want to do it alone, then do it with another author or bring an extroverted friend. It takes some of the pressure off you. Because an extrovert can't break the ice for you if you don't do it because they can't stand it. So I've got a very extroverted son, and I've actually taken him to, I think there was a little book fair in Phoenix, and took him with me, and he had a ball breaking the ice, and then he'd say, yeah, and here's my mom, and then I'd take it from there, and I'm like, kid, I got to bring you to more events. This is awesome. So it's just a ton of little things like that.
He's probably like, Mom, let's host more events in Hawaii and other fun places.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those are great tips. It's funny. I'm a bit of an introvert myself, so like all those tips you've given are things I've developed myself as well for going around speaking. And one of the reasons why I thought of you first is, you know, one, you're a great resource, but I've seen you speak about these different topics at conferences and have run into you at several of them over the years. So I was wondering, like, how did you get started on the conference circuit?
Oh, I have to stop and think back on that. It's actually, when I was first starting out and grabbed, you know, got my head around the fact that I was going to have to make appearances and that that is what is going to springboard a little bit what I do, that it can't be totally done online. Now, keep in mind, that was a few years ago. I actually pitched conferences. I pitched them just like I would anything freelance, any editor, any agent. I actually just pitched them. And it surprised me how many people were interested and had not been pitched. They were used to just, you know, scavenging for speakers and, you know, who do you want? Who do you want? Let's see if they'll come kind of thing. And when I pitched, people kind of jumped on it. And from there, it's pure word of mouth. Once you've been to a few, then it starts spreading. And especially once they hear you and realize that you know a little bit about what you're talking about. And, you know, because, man, sometimes that can be a harsh circuit, let me tell you.
Yeah. I know Robert and I have spoken at a lot of conferences before, too, and you're surprised at how much you know. You're proud of how much you know, but you still run into questions and some tough folks who will say, well, you're saying this, but I've heard it this other way, and publishing is not necessarily a black and white industry, so... Yeah.
No, somebody loves to put you on the spot. There's always somebody. So I give a few tips and fun Shy Writer about how to deal with some of that. And that's rough. You just can't let it fluster you.
Are there specific things from your experience where writers can get more out of a conference when they go to a conference?
Be prepared for it. I'm amazed at how many just go to a conference to see what happens. And I know when I go to a conference, even as a speaker, I research who else is speaking. Because when I'm not speaking, I want to get the most out of a conference. So I'm sitting in the back of the room at somebody else's session, and I will research the bios and websites of whoever else is going to be there. And I also like to look at who the attendees are. You know, there's a few conferences that will list all the attendees that have signed up, which I think is kind of cool. And I glance that over, too, to see if I recognize any Funds for Writers readers or any fellow authors that I know from online, because I want to put names to faces. Then I go with a few lists of what I want to get out of it. You know, why am I going to this particular conference? What do I want to walk away with that I didn't have when I went? And also what they need to come up with, and I preach this religiously, is one-liners. I think every writer needs to come in with their one-liner set. And I'm not just talking about your elevator pitch for your book, but for you as a writer, because you're going to run into people that say, oh, what are you writing? Oh, how long are you writing? Oh, why are you here? Or, I mean, they'll hit you with all these questions. And if you've got these one-liners already ready, it takes so much stress off of you that you don't have to be on the spot. And it also makes you sound really smart.
That's true.
Which for people like me, it's hard to do that sometimes. So better to be.
If somebody asks you a question and you're like, oh, this, you know, you do yeah. Sound kind of crackerjack. And it's, I just think it raises the confidence of the writer that attends a conference that they're not so on the spot.
I think those are excellent tips. When you go to a conference, you know, always check out who is speaking. You know why you're there. Have that goal. Have that plan. And I've never heard that before. But the one-liners for all the potential questions you'll get as to why are you here? You know, what do you write? Having those all prepared, I think that's amazing advice and really smart to be prepared. And I bet you get a lot more from a conference by doing all of that.
You do. You don't have to worry about what to say if somebody comes up to you.
Yeah. So what's kind of, if you were going to take a conference, you know, around the country, one that you've been to, I know you've been to a bunch, is there one that you've had a better time at or you highly recommend?
It's hard to say because I go as a speaker rather than an attendee. The last one I went to as an attendee, I got roped into speaking as well. That often happens. is the Killer Nashville. You know, I'm in the mystery genre. I read mystery. I write mystery. It's what I would do full time, and I thoroughly enjoy Killer Nashville. Believe it or not, the shy writer in me keeps me out of Boucher Con and Malice because they're huge. They're just these big old conferences, and I still stumble. I mean, you get to a big one like that, and I feel like I'm nervous as to what to say and who to approach. And it's one thing when people approach you. It's a whole lot easier when people approach you, but when you need to approach other people, that's a whole different ballgame. And, you know, at something like BoucherCon, I'm small fry, and that's intimidating. And I understand that feeling. And right now, I will attend. BoucherCon was in Raleigh this year, and I attended a class or two, but came home. I had so many people say, "Why didn't you stay the whole conference? It was awesome. It was this." And I'm like, "No, that's all right. I put my toe in the water and came home. I'm good. I'm good."
Yeah, that's so funny because, you know, I went to AWP a few years ago in Chicago as a speaker, and you know, I got so overwhelmed that after I did my speaking thing, I spent the rest of the time I was in Chicago just sightseeing with my wife.
No, I get that. Yeah. My husband goes with me all the time because, you know, my whole thing about take somebody with you to make you feel better if you're an introvert, yeah, he's there. He's there. He's always in the crowd, and usually he's in the back of the room doing hand gestures, how many minutes you've got left, and, you know, cut it, and this kind of thing. And I don't know that I could do it without him or having that backup. But when I come in from speaking, people think it's easy to speak, and I get done and go back up to the room. He says, "You ready for your bourbon?" I'm like, "Yes."
Well, I bet it's really nice to have that kind of support in your writing career and speaking and everything that you do.
It's phenomenal. I wish every writer had some kind of support like that, because whether the other person writes or not, just having them there being a cheerleader is wonderful.
Anyway, we are starting to get to the end of this podcast, and with the end of all of our podcasts and our interviews, and we're so thankful to have you on. Robert and I like to do this thing called the 10 question blitz, and this is where I've got 10 questions all lined up, some of them a little harder, some easier, and we just want kind of your initial thoughts and reactions to all of them. So, Hope, are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm not really good at this, but we'll see.
Don't worry. It's easy. We don't bite. All right, we are ready for the 10 question blitz.
Number one.
Are you a morning rider, day rider, or night rider, and why?
Night rider, without a doubt. I don't wake up until 10 o'clock in the morning. Being on this podcast made me get up an hour early.
Sorry about that.
I just always have been a night person. I like it when the world's quiet. I can think better.
Yeah, I like writing at night, too.
Number two.
When was the moment you realized that you wanted to be a writer?
12th grade. I was editor of my high school yearbook. I was afraid to be a writer because I was also very good in math and science. So I went off into those fields, and the writing kept following me, and once I got offered the bribe, I realized there was a story I had to get out of me and realize, you know, this writing thing's kind of cool. So I guess it was twofold, 12th grade and then when I was offered a bribe.
That's great. If we could all be so lucky to be offered a bribe, that led to our writing career.
Number three.
I know you speak at a lot of conferences. What's the best moment you've ever had at a conference?
Oh, that was easy. Florida Writers Association, and it was way early in my career, and I talked about why we wanted to be writers, and the anecdote I used at the end was, you know, if you're at a party and somebody comes up to you and says, "What do you do?" and we're always afraid to say we're writers, it's a matter of saying, "Yes, I'm a writer, and I enjoy what I do, and I hope I never have to retire," because frankly, how many people say they hope they never have to retire? I said, "You'll own the conversation." And I got a standing ovation, and somebody came up to me crying and hugged me for that. So that was touching. I will remember that for years.
Number four.
Now, on the flip side of things, What's the craziest moment you've ever had at a writing conference?
It was actually the Florida Writers Conference 2 years before that. Oh. So, yeah. I have trouble seeing when the lights go down. And so I was up there very nervous early in my career. And I had this, I was giving the keynote, my very first keynote. And they lowered the lights. I couldn't see my notes and I had to wing it. I had to totally wing it. And I danced all over that paper. And I got done. And that was the moment I got the clue to put in the shy writer, remember, you'll never see these people again. And 2 years later, they asked me back. So.
Robert, you think you could present in the dark?
I've tried reading poems in the dark on the stage, and I've made it through, but it's difficult. It's a different world.
Funny.
Number five.
Now, I know you've worked for the government, you have done other things, but if you weren't a writer today or a publishing professional, what would you be?
A farmer? People laugh at that. My degree is actually in agronomy, which is a branch of agriculture. My degree is in university. I worked in grants through the U.S. Department of Agriculture for 25 years. So if I'm not in here at the computer, I'm outside with my garden at the lake with my flock of chickens.
Gotcha. Unrelated to the 10-question blitz, is that hard if you don't get up till 10?
Yeah, they have to wait for me. The chickens are always up way before I am, so, yeah.
All right.
Number six.
You go out to dinner with any three writers, living or dead. Who do you invite?
Oh, that's so hard.
Well, other than me and Robert, of course. I mean, I'm sure you're talking about choices.
That makes it harder. actually, being in South Carolina, I'm a Pat Conroy fan. He's such a personality. He's a wild personality. Oh God, let me think. Who else? Hugh Howey. He's so smart. Yeah. He is so smart. I've heard him in several cases and spoke to him briefly, and I really like to listen to his common sense. You know, I would like to finally meet Chuck Wendig.
Number seven.
Assuming that at that dinner party, the waiter comes up to you and says, "What are you drinking?" You reply,
"Bourbon and water."
Number eight.
Robert and I have both worn many different types of facial hair, as you probably know. For guy writers, are you a fan of beard, no beard?
Beard.
Beard.
Without a doubt.
And why?
I'm married to one with a beard. I've never seen him without one.
Nice. I hope he listens to this and appreciates your comments.
Number nine.
If you had to write a memoir about your writing career, what would you title it?
What if I'd taken the bribe?
I wonder how many other writers can really say, my writing career started with a bribe. That's so great. That blows my mind.
Number 10.
Best piece of writing advice you would offer to any aspiring writer?
Write daily. And a lot of people argue with me on that, and I just argue right back. They're not going to change my mind. I don't care. Because it's like any job, the more you do it and the more regular you do it, the better you get at it. And everybody knows if you've got a 9-to-5 job and you take a 2-week vacation and come back, you're playing catch up, and it just makes sense. If writing's going to be your job, treat it like it's a job, and that means come to work every day.
That's great. Great advice.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Hope. I just want to let everyone who's listening to the podcast know, remind them to learn more about Hope. Please go to hopeclark.com or fundsforwriters.com. And you can learn more about Hope and also learn more about her Funds for Writers program. Thank you so much, Hope.
Yeah, thanks, Hope.
Thanks. This was fun.
Well, I thought that was a great interview with Hope. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, it was great. I knew she was going to be a great interview subject. I've seen her live before, so she just has so much to offer and so much experience. So
yeah, she really covered the gambit between conferences, between getting grants, all these kinds of things that writers need to take consider very important. At least I know they're very important, and I thought it was an amazing conversation.
Yeah, and even though like I knew about it, it's always like that extra thing that puts her over the top is talking about like the shy writer and stuff. And I think so many writers are introverts, you know, that it really strikes a chord with people. So completely. So bringing that all together, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, this is our first podcast, and we were talking about doing action items, you know, like one or two action items. And I was wondering if you have like an action item or two.
Well, action item, I have about five, I think, here.
Wow.
That I would like to go over. These are the kinds of things that I took away from this interview that I think would help any writer in their writing career. And first, one of the first points I remember her talking about was about entering writing competitions to build your writing resume and how important this can be, especially if you don't have any other credits to your name, anything else to include. Entering and placing or even winning a writing competition could absolutely be the gateway into finding other avenues for writing. So I thought that was very interesting. Another action point that she said was to call local towns, to think local, and to call local towns with art councils that are around you and ask if they have any writing grants. I remember her specifically saying that a lot of them don't advertise this, and that instead they try to keep it quiet because they don't want too many people to enter. But because of that, a lot of these writing grants go unclaimed. And so just think about towns around you, call, find out, see what you can find. You know, it never hurts to ask. The next action item I took away was when writing multiple novels at once, if you are lucky enough to be able to do this, consider writing each one in a different point of view. That'll help you keep your voice, keep your characters' voices straight. That way they don't kind of blend together. I mean, I thought that was real fascinating that Hope brought that up, because I had never thought twice. I've never been able to write multiple things at once, partially because of that problem. So I'm actually going to use that in the future when I write short stories and other novels and that kind of thing. Another note that I took away, I think this is a great action item, is if you're an introvert, bring someone along with you to conferences. They can help you feel more comfortable in extrovert happy settings. I know she mentioned that she often takes her son, I think. You know, I think this is a great idea, bringing someone along with you to make you feel more comfortable, whether they come with you to the event or even just to the city to listen to you practice your pitch, your speech, whatever you're doing. And another, and this one I found super, super fascinating, was be prepared before entering a conference. And now I always think about being prepared before I go, but she mentioned three specific action item takeaways to do, and I thought this was great. And number one was research all the speakers. Make sure you know who they all are. Make sure you are prepared to talk to them. Two, have a list of goals accomplished while you are there. If you go in just wanting to experience the whole thing, well, that's great. But if you're paying a fee to get in, you really want to maximize your time there. And by having a set of achievable goals, you will find it more worthwhile to be there. And finally, the one thing that I thought was super fascinating was she said, have one-line answers prepared for all potential questions that you could get from attendees, speakers, and agents. And maybe not all of them, but as many as you can. You know, what's your book about? You know, what do you want to do with your career? Make sure you have crisp, precise answers that you've recited over time, because you never know who you may talk to who could change your writing career for the better.
Yeah, and I know with introverts, having those answers ahead of time helps so much, because I think a lot of the reason introverts are introverts is because we like to think, and I'm including myself in with the introverts here, you know, we like to really think and mull over questions. So if we have answers ahead of time coming in, then you don't have that awkward, oh, what do I say here? And
yeah, you know, absolutely.
What to do there. So that's great that, you know, you're gung-ho, got the five action items there. One that I really liked was when Hope mentioned when she first got started with conferences, you know, first, you know, she had to come over being an introvert, but then how does she break in? And I think many writers think that for conferences, you have to be invited to get there. And a lot of writers do get invited, but Hope took the strategy of not waiting around for it. She actually pitched conferences much like a freelance writer would pitch articles to a magazine. And, you know, I've been on both sides of this fence. I've been invited to conferences, but I've also helped with getting the conferences together. And one of the first things we do is try to come up with a list of people to invite. So if you pitch people and look attractive as a writer who's ready to come in and inspire people or educate people, then you know, that's a great way to go, is to actually go ahead and pitch, much like you would a freelancer with a magazine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great advice. Anyway, I think that was a great first show. I want to thank C. Hope Clark for coming on the program, a brave soul. I also want to thank all the folks who encouraged us to put together this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. From Robert Lee Brewer and me, Brian A. Clems, thanks for listening to the Writer's Market podcast. Come visit us at writersmarket.com and writersdigest.com. And don't forget to stop back next time for more great publishing advice. Until then, take care of yourself and your writing.